Thanks for joining us here on Week in Ag Matters, brought to you by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Anna Hoster, your host this weekend, joined by
Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin, thank you for joining us this weekend.
Where else would I be?
You know, I'm not quite sure. You know, we haven't had a whole lot that we've had to travel out of the office for this past week. So I guess you're always here.
It's kind of a quiet week. And, you know, once in a while, that's okay, too.
Yeah, relatively quiet week. There were a couple instances where I needed to travel this week. On Wednesday, I traveled to Kinsey's Innovation Center for a Tariffs Hurt the Heartland town hall meeting. Senator Ernst actually hosted or moderated the roundtable and heard from Iowa manufacturers, small business owners, and farmers about the impacts that tariffs are having on them and their operations, as well as just the importance of having trade deals with other countries and what that really means for rural Americans. And then on Friday, I traveled to Ebert Honey in Lindsayville.
Well, what's the buzz there?
Well, there's not a whole lot of buzz there, Dustin. There's actually a bee shortage.
Really?
So Ebert Honey usually gets their bees supplied from a place out of California. But there have been bad conditions. And you'll have to look into my story on Monday on our website, iowaagnet.com, to find out more about what I mean when I say bad conditions that have prevented all of these bees from being shipped to Iowa. So usually Ebert Honey is shorted about a couple hundred each year, but this year they're actually shorted thousands. So I take a look into that on Monday in my Money Matters program.
And, you know, you mentioned bees, you know, and talking about pollinators and everything going on. Ken will be in here towards the end of the show. He's going to talk about monarchs and some of the things and the challenges they're facing coming up. So, I mean, it's not just been the bees. It's been something we've been watching, especially through Iowa, where the bees and the monarchs tend to migrate through on their way back and forth from the north to the south. So definitely some interesting things going on, and we're going to hear more from Ken as well on the monarchs.
Does Ken happen to talk about how to avoid a monarch with your car by any chance?
You know, I don't know. Why? Did you have a run-in?
Yeah, I accidentally maybe hit a monarch on my way back from Williamsburg on Wednesday. Not intentionally. It flew at me. And, you know, when you're going roughly 78 miles per hour, it's kind of hard to avoid a butterfly that's coming right at you.
Why would you admit to speeding right on the air?
You know, because people do it. So I passed
the State Patrol is looking for her. Anna Hastert can be found at our during regular business hours at our offices.
So, well, maybe I was going a little bit slower than that, but
you were just using it as an exaggeration point.
Right, right. I was just.
It felt like, kind of like wind chill. It was your feels like speed.
Right, yeah.
That's never worked with a state patrolman. I swear it felt like I was only doing 55.
Well, I guess we'll have to actually tune into Ken's segment to figure out if he has any tips on how to avoid a monarch butterfly that's flying straight for your windshield.
And speaking of things coming up as well, coming up right after the break here, I get a chance to sit down this week with Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. You know, we've now 6 weeks since the floods began in southwest Iowa. It's hard to believe. It's kind of flown by in a way, but it's been one of those things where it's not for them, obviously, but it's one of those things that's just been ever-changing and it's always moving. And so in that interest, I sat down with the governor and just wanted to talk about where things are right now. We also talked a little bit about the Mississippi River, which has been not really making up of its mind if it wants to go higher or lower. And so there's a lot of things to be worried about there. And there's things that she has to take into consideration, and the government has to take into consideration as far as the Mississippi during the same time they're dealing with all the aftermath of the flooding in southwest Iowa, where there is still water standing in places like Pacific Junction, where they are still hurting and still having to pump water out of that city.
Right. And you actually got a one-on-one interview with Governor Reynolds in her office, which not many reporters get to do very often. So looking forward to all of that great information that you were able to collect there here this week, Dustin.
All right. So I think, we got to pay the bills here a little bit first, don't we? At least justify you and I having to work on a Saturday. And a Sunday.
Right, I agree, Dustin. So we will have more content here for you on Week in Ag Matters right after the break.
Data is data is data. Unless you work with FS, then your data comes with expert insight
Tapping into a wide range of technologies through MyField, your FS crop specialist evaluates trial data from your farm, along with only the most qualified aggregated data that reveals trends in your area. With MyField, your FS crop specialist delivers the insights you need to build your ROI. Learn how results from FS nitrogen trials can be applied to your farm at fsmyfield.com. FS, bringing you what's next.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Hard to believe it's been 6 weeks already since the flooding started in southwest Iowa along the Missouri River Valley. We're all familiar with the devastation that has occurred and is still being fought over here in the state of Iowa. Of course, on the other side of the state, we have the Mississippi River that is rising and falling, handling a large amount of snowfall that is coming from Minnesota and Wisconsin. A lot of water yet to be coming down that river as well. And, you know, we get a lot of information coming at us from all sides a lot, and I thought it would be a great time to sit down with Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and just hear from the governor about what is going on, where things are standing right now, and I'll let you listen in on that interview. We're here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network today, joined by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds. Thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us today.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for being here.
So as we look here at the week, we're looking at about 6 weeks since the flooding started in southwest Iowa. And it's been one of those things where it's always been progressing. There's information coming from all over the place. And I thought we'd just sit down today and kind of just see where things are now 6 weeks out.
Yeah, well, it's hard to believe that we still have actually water standing in a lot of the communities. Pacific Junction especially has been hard hit. They still have people that are not able to get back into their homes. I just this morning held the first Governor's Flood Recovery Advisory Board meeting where we have 15 individuals that will serve as part of the advisory board. We'll have six working groups that will be spun off of that: finance, economic development, flood management and infrastructure, public health, and, of course, agriculture. And so, you know, this is catastrophic flooding. We have 250 miles of levee that's been compromised, over 50 breaches, 25,000 homes have been impacted, and about 4,200 businesses. And, you know, those numbers still could probably be on the short side. So right now we've been working extensively with the Corps. They are going to prioritize four main levee breaches, and they're range anywhere from 62 to 70 feet deep and 500 feet wide. And so their goal in the short term is to actually just plug the hole so we can stop the inflow of water, which is still taking place. And then it'll allow us to do a better job of really assessing the damage and some of the next steps so we can start to put probably a more realistic cost to what it's going to take to start the recovery and rebuild process. So right now I did an emergency presidential declaration. I was really proud of our emergency managers, our local officials, and our state emergency operations center. We were able to get submitted, and the president was able to sign off in 2 days a presidential disaster declaration. And so the significance of that, I think we're up to 7 counties now that qualify for individual assistance, and then of course public assistance is available too, and that'll be able to be layered with the governor's proclamation that I signed that has 62 counties that are covered underneath that.
And 2 weeks ago, Vice President Mike Pence was here. You got to survey the damage with him. He got to see it again firsthand. I know it wasn't his first trip here to see the damage, but there was been a lot of questions at that time frame as, you know, where is disaster relief? Where is all that coming from? And he had a chance to speak to some people there.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate him coming back. And because, you know, the first time we really didn't get him down to really fly the whole levee system and to see the impact that the floods had on southwest Iowa. And so you can talk about it and you can tell it and you can send pictures, but till you have the opportunity to really fly over it and see the vast destruction that's taken place, it has a significant difference. And he could not believe the amount of water that was still standing 1 month after the incident. We also had, along with the vice president, myself, we had acting director Gaynor of FEMA. And again, I think it was critical that he got to see the extensive damage that's taken place. So, you know, one of the things with the governor's flood recovery advisory board, it is so imperative that we have a coordinated and strategic approach to this from the local, state, and federal level. And actually, we've even taken it one step closer. We, as governors, are approaching this from a regional perspective as well. So I hosted a meeting with Governor Ricketts and Governor Parsons from Missouri and Council Bluffs. Governor Kelly will be participating with us. She was just unable to make it to that first meeting. We'll be meeting again on Friday. And one of our main objectives is, of course, to rebuild in the short term what we need to do, but to look at how we, what the long-term strategy is, and that flood control and people need to be the number one priority of the Corps when it comes to mitigating the Missouri River, and that's not been the case. And so it's imperative that, especially with the vulnerability that we have with the levee system that's compromised for 250 miles, if we get any type of a heavy rain, which we're entering into the rainy season, we're going to be dealing with this all over again. And so it is just critical that we focus on flood control and people when we're managing the Missouri River.
And a lot of questions being asked about the Army Corps of Engineers and the role in a situation like this where they're having to make some tough decisions. I know Senators Grassley and Ernst have really been in investigating where their priorities lie as a Corps. And last week they had the chance to kind of get those people together with the Corps and kind of get some dialogue opening.
Yeah, so I appreciated Senator Ernst really hosting that field hearing. She did that in Glenwood. Senator Grassley, of course, was there. And Gillibrand was also there as well. I was able to participate in the end of it. I wasn't there for the whole meeting. But again, to have the opportunity to hear from individuals, the mayor from Hamburg, who, you know, was devastated in 2011. And my message to the individuals that are serving on the Flood Recovery Advisory Board is we have to think about this differently. We can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. People are tired and weary. We had farmers that were just getting back into the fields. We have farmers that still have, you know, loans from 2011. We don't want, you know, we want them to stay. We don't want them to leave. We have communities where people are making the decisions if they just pack up and move out or if they stay and help us be a part of rebuilding these communities better and more vibrant going forward. And so I appreciated them holding the field hearings there. Then I had the opportunity afterwards to sit down with Major General Spellman, with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Hellinger, and then Hudson as well. And just to talk to them about this needs to be a priority. It needs to be flood control. We need to have the flexibility to collaborate, coordinate, and work together and be innovative. So maybe it's restructuring the levees. Maybe it's talking about the type of material that we're using to build them back up, coordinating it with the infrastructure rebuild as far as the roads and highways. We want to make sure that those are coordinated as well. And then one thing that we want to do going forward is we want to make sure that we're putting in place a flood asset management program so that we know where the levees are, we know where the pumps are, we know where the ag levees are at, so that we can really, again, think about this in a holistic manner.
And so, you know, also waiting for disaster relief from the federal government. We've been waiting for that now for a few weeks. It didn't get through the first time. Senator Grassley did tell people at the event when Vice President Pence was there, don't worry, we haven't let a disaster go unaided. But still a lot of wait and see. And Iowa not the only folks waiting on that. There's still hurricane relief in that bill as well. But you're talking about damage here in Iowa, over $1.5 billion. Getting that assistance from the federal government is going to help a lot.
Well, it's necessary. There's no way that these communities can do this on their own. And so I appreciate it. Again, that was part of Vice President Pence, I think, coming into the state and just really saying to our congressional delegation, we need to get this passed. We need to put partisan politics aside. We need to focus on those that are hurting. And again, it helps provide the certainty and the predictability that our businesses are looking for. You know, they're trying to make decisions about whether they rebuild or stay, and we want to provide to them every assurance that we can that not only are we going to rebuild differently, We're going to take a look at what the entire system looks like, but also the funding is going to be there to make sure that we can make that happen. And so it's critical that we have our congressional delegation. They're in there fighting for us, but we need to get something done. And really the point was we have presidential candidates that are traveling through this state that are wanting to go down there and see the damage. They talk a lot about, you know, empowering rural Iowa and you know, that rural Iowa needs some assistance, that they need some help to come back and be stronger than ever. Well, you can't come through this state and talk about that and then go back to Washington, D.C. and vote no on a disaster declaration or disaster funding. So they need to, follow through with what they say when they're in our state, and they need to do that with a vote on providing funding that'll help rebuild and get us back in shape.
And being Iowa in the Midwest, the flooding there was kind of an add-on at the end of this disaster bill. Would there have been enough in there to help Iowa, or would there have been like a need for a future bill or a future funding later on?
I think there's going to be need for more. I mean, because we truly don't know the complete impact of the flood. We can't even get in and assess in some of the areas because we still have water standing. And so the Corps is working on trying to do some kind of an assessment. They think they have funding right now to plug the four major breaches, which is critical. We have to have that happen so that they can really get a complete estimate of what it's going to cost to rebuild. They've let the contracts on two, and so they're working on the third one, but it will take literally a year just to complete that. We were able to get some early release of funds from the U.S. Department of Transportation. So we need to get Interstate 29 open, the amount of commerce that passes through that, and the workaround to get around the areas that are closed. It's costing a tremendous amount of money every day from that perspective as well. And I think, honestly, when we talk about ag and the impact that that has, Senator Grassley was estimating anywhere from $1.2 to $2 billion of annual economic impact to the state, and that's just in the 6 hardest hit counties. And so, you know, we are a state that feeds and fuels the world, and we need to make sure that we're, doing everything we can to get that land back into, so it can be productive and help these farmers be successful and do what they are trying to do every single day.
And of course, we've been talking a lot about the Southwest Missouri River Valley area there in Iowa, but also we have another river on the other side of the state that's been kind of rising and falling as been going because it's been taking all the snow from up north, and that's the Mississippi. Where are things there?
Yeah, so we're watching that very closely, and I just added a couple more counties to the governor's disaster proclamation. So I think we added two or three more along the eastern side of the state. That's one of the things that we've requested from FEMA. So we don't want them to, they refer to this as an incident, and they're considering closing it down. And we have made the request. I made it to Acting Director Gaynor when I was traveling with him and the Vice President to not shut the incident down, because we are starting to see flooding on the eastern side of the state. And if they do that, then we have to start the whole process over. And especially, again, the vulnerability of the western side of the state with the compromised levee, not to mention with the snowmelt and the amount of water that's coming down the Mississippi, we're going to probably see some and experience some flooding there. And so with the shape that the state is in, it's just, again, it's just imperative that they leave this open so that we don't have to start all over with what could potentially be some significant flooding on the eastern side of the state. I'll be in Davenport later this week, so we'll sit down with their emergency management people and just get an overview on where they're at, what the projections are moving forward, and just make sure that we're being proactive in staging HESCO barriers or anything that we need to do to help them mitigate any of the damage that might come from the flooding on that side of the state.
All right, and as we get ready to wrap up, I mean, you can't say enough about the local people in this situation. You know, they're prepared for the need of a disaster, but they have been completely inundated, but yet they just keep fighting along, and they've in the midst of being overwhelmed, how they just keep going.
It is just incredible to see the resiliency of Iowans and the determination to just not only help each other, but to help their communities, and the determination to, you know, come back stronger and better than ever. And just, again, the coordination to stop. I was there early on, and to hear, you know, the emergency managers or local law enforcement, local elected officials, volunteers, people, the, you know, everybody just pitching in to rescue people. I mean, in Missouri Valley, they didn't have any boats there, and they were rescuing people in the middle of the night. And within less than an hour, the DNR had 6 boats there, and the community was rescuing people from their homes. The mayor from Hornick, incredible, really got in front of it and had a plan put together, evacuated the community. It's honestly, amazing that we didn't have any more loss of life than we did, because people didn't have very much time to evacuate. And when you, I did the flyover the second day, I mean, it literally looked like an ocean, and all you could see was the top of the bins and the top of some of these farmsteads. I don't even know how, you know, they were able to get out livestock. We had a couple of barns of hogs that were stranded. We were feeding them by boat and by drop and feed in, and we were able to work with the DOT and put a makeshift road together so we could get, you know, hogs out of two barns. That would have been just another significant loss, not only for the livestock, but from a financial perspective as well. But that takes a lot of people working together. And I know one of the biggest concerns is we had so much stored grain, and there was, because of the roads, wet season, we had the secondary road system is shot. So that's something we're working on too. So when farmers are ready to get in the field, we need to make sure that they can get there. But we couldn't get the grain out. They didn't have time. And so most of it's not insured, and it's just so important that, and I know our senators are working on that, both Grassley and Ernst, to make sure that they get some funding in there for the stored grain that was, you know, damaged through all of this as well. And it's just been a tough several years anyway. And so, but again, our farmers too are resilient, and we're working hard every day to get them the support that they deserve and that they need.
Governor Reynolds, I thank you so much for taking the time to give us an update today.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And to just all the people out there, keep them in your prayers. They're fighting the good fight, and they're not giving up, but, they're facing some pretty tough things.
And that was Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds here on Weekend Ag Matters. Ken Root will be back to wrap things up for us right after this.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Monarch butterflies are an amazing species. They migrate from Mexico to Canada every year and back again. They make their progress with succeeding generations. As the first wave lays eggs on milkweed plants where the larvae hatch, pupate, and emerge as the beautiful adults to continue the journey. The symbiotic relationship of the insect and the host plant is even more fascinating, as it is the key to their existence. Monarch butterflies are toxic to birds due to their milkweed diet. A video of a young bird shows it easily catching a 4-inch wide monarch butterfly and tearing the wings off. Then it swallowed the body and prepared to look for more. But in a few seconds, it regurgitated the butterfly because of its toxicity. Birds are sight feeders, and from that point on, that bird will never eat another butterfly with those markings. The real problem for the monarch is that milkweed is disappearing from farm fields over a vast region where genetically modified plants are grown. The reason is the ability of glyphosate, a non-selective herbicide, to kill milkweed. The butterflies are declining due to loss of habitat, and the loss coincides almost exactly with the broad use of glyphosate beginning in the 1990s. This is clearly an unintended consequence, but it's still a consequence. Unfortunately, this butterfly has been caught up in political agendas, and only in the last 2 years has there been a united effort to save the species. Here's another factor. If we don't get the population back to an acceptable level, the Endangered Species Act could list them as threatened or endangered. That could change cropping practices across the entire range, which is directly overlaid with the most productive farmland in the country. The final result of all the credible studies shows the culprit is habitat loss. Scientists and regulators have determined the lack of milkweed plants within the range of each generation of monarchs has become too small to support the population that existed before widespread use of effective herbicides. Our response could be the wave of the future to keep the feds out of your fields. Whether it is voluntary to improve water quality, reduce soil erosion, or improve habitat for declining species, willingness to work with the system is far better than confronting it. I don't want farmers branded as butterfly killers, but I think the decline of monarchs because of intensive farming will have ramifications in the years ahead. It surely won't be the last incident of species being impacted by the loss of their habitat. The problem with monarchs is that almost everyone can identify them, and they have carved out a place in our hearts as a little friendly, fluttering beauty. The species decline has been identified. Whether it's frivolous in your mind or not, there's a lot of pressure to bring this butterfly back. How it's handled by government and private landowners will show our ability to work together in a changing and challenging world. That's the way I see it. I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Weekend Ag Matters is produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network for News Talk 1540 KXEL. Get more agribusiness information online at iowaagnet.com. And listen for reports from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network 5 times each weekday on the Voice of Eastern Iowa, News Talk 1540 KXEL.